Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. As you know, I'm sure many of you know by now, every Tuesday, a show for everyone to come on or anyone that's interested in coming on to talk about experiences they've been through, things that they're going through or a loved one's going through, any injustices that have been done in this country to anyone in this country. And so, again, I'm inviting anyone and all of you to call in if there's anything that you would like to discuss about the criminal justice system or about the injustices going on in America. I'm going to start off with the school shooting that took place in Texas, because that's a big topic right now, gun control. And I just want to say one thing. I notice everybody puts the blame on everyone when things like this happen. The governor of Texas was supposed to be at an NRA convention, which he changed his mind, because I'm sure he knows that if he did go, everybody would really be on his back. But he didn't go. He did participate, but it was virtual. One of the things is everyone is blaming everyone. The Republicans, the NRA, they're blaming the mentally ill for the crimes that are committed, or the person themselves committing the crime. And no one's taking the blame on that end for guns being sold to minors, you might say, because a lot of these kids buying guns are under the age of 18 or 18, and they're not even old enough to register to drink or to register for the military. But one of the things I wanted to say is people have to blame others for everything that happens. I'm going to blame advocates, prison advocates. Because there was a petition that was circulated and has been circulated periodically to do away with prisons and replace them with long-term residential treatment facilities, mental health, addiction, substance abuse, anger management, whatever the case may be, long-term residential treatment facilities. Out of 2.3 million incarcerated in the United States of America, 669 people signed a petition. What in the hell happened to the rest of you who either have loved ones incarcerated or are advocates? You claim to be advocates. You claim to acknowledge all the injustices going on in the prisons. You claim to state and be aware that these people are not getting rehabilitated in the prisons. You admit that the people training are not qualified trainers. They're not qualified to do the work that a psychologist or a psychiatrist should be doing. What is wrong with you, advocates in the United States, advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth? What is wrong with you? Is it because of the picture that's on the petition that's being circulated? A bird, a sign of freedom? Has anybody clicked on it to see exactly where it brings them? It doesn't bring them to the author who wrote the book, or an author that wrote a book. It brings them to the petition site, change.org, replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. I don't care if your loved one or if the person you're advocating for is wrongfully convicted, was wrongfully convicted, is a first-time offender, is on death row. I don't care what the situation is. They're not getting the treatment. They're getting abused. They're getting provoked, harassed, violated, tormented, tortured. Are you as bad as the overseers wanting to see these things occur because you don't want to sign a petition that would make things much easier, much simpler? And then you pass, and when something happens to them while they're incarcerated, if they end up committing suicide or dying otherwise, you blame the people overseeing them. When you have an opportunity yourself to make changes, just like the politicians, just like legislative members who knows exactly what's going on behind those prison walls and are too cowardly, too afraid to do anything about it. I once blamed the overseers, but you know what? Overseers cannot be overseeing if people complain, if people put a stop to it. Their unions are becoming more powerful than the President of the United States, because no one's doing anything about anything that happens. petition that replaces prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. And somebody said one time, what about serial killers? What about terrorists? Long-term residential treatment facility doesn't mean they're going to be out. It means that they're going to be getting the treatment for as long as they're in, whether it's for life, life without, whatever the case may be. They're going to be in a long-term residential treatment facility getting the treatment they need. And those who are serving 5 years, well, a lot of you might say, well, they'll be out in 5 years. They might be out in 5 years, but if they're not getting the appropriate rehabilitation, they're going to be back in again. So there goes the recidivism rate up there. But if they're in a residential treatment facility long-term, they can be out in 3 years and have received the treatment that they needed rather than the 5 years in a prison and not receiving anything. Those who are in for life sentences, if they were in a long-term residential treatment facility for 20 or 25 years, receiving the treatment they need, long-term residential mental health treatment, they would be out in 25 years, 20 or 25 years. They wouldn't be in for life without parole, and your taxpayer dollars wouldn't be wasted. And families of prisoners are prisoners just like prisoners themselves. But also the families of victims do not heal as long. They don't heal any quicker when somebody's thrown into prison for life, life without parole. As a matter of fact, it's good for us to sympathize with the victims and to try to be there for the victims or their families. However, it doesn't mean we have to get involved in something we know nothing about. We can feel bad for both the victims and the offender because we know something went wrong. Something went wrong along the way. No child is born bad. And as we can see, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. Well, I would say I don't care how much of an advocate you are. You can be out there in the media. You can be out there in coalitions talking a big talk but not doing a thing. Because if anybody was doing anything, there'd be a lot more changes going on right now than there have been. And they claim that solitary confinement and restrictive housing is being abolished within the next 2 or 3 years. They're looking for an alternative. But if that's the case, why isn't there more talk about it? And why does it have to take 2 or 3 years? Solitary confinement, as we all know, in restrictive housing units, which we all know, when they're kept in cages 22 to 24 hours a day, and a lot of their property is taken from them, we all know it's psychological torture. Psychological torture. It's things that our units, our troops, go in other countries during war, and they put them through. And then they come back here, and it's happening all over again with U.S. citizens. Psychological torture. Advocates who claim to be advocates, and many of you who are advocates and not willing to work with other advocates or not willing to sign petitions involving replacing prisons with treatment that prisoners need. What are you all about? And you may, a lot of you may not like what I'm saying, and I could give a shit, but I'm tired of this. I'm tired of these so-called people claiming to be advocates. And look at the advocates that are on Facebook for the mentally ill. And yet, anything that pertains to the mentally ill, when these shows are sent to their Facebook page, they deny it. They deny it. What is that about? What do they have these Facebook groups for, working with the mentally ill, yet denying something that involves mentally ill? The Coalition for Prison and Judicial. Okay, this is a good one everybody should know about. On Facebook, there's a Coalition for Prison and Judicial Reform. They never deny anything. They accept everything because those are true advocates. On Facebook, there's a Facebook page called Prison Abuse. They accept everything because they are advocates against anti-abuse in the prisons. People for Prisoners' Rights. They accept everything because they are true advocates. Support Our Prisoners, Facebook page on Support Our Prisoners. They accept everything. Advocates for Justice. This is what I mean. Advocates for Justice in America, they accept everything. faith, fighting against injustices, injustice to bring hope. They accept everything. Unity Alliance, advocacy motivation. They accept everything. End mass incarceration. They accept everything. Global justice, they accept everything. These are all advocacy groups on Facebook that are advocating for the incarcerated. Bridges for Change, they accept everything. Support Our Prisoners, Justice for All, Global Justice, Supporting Our Incarcerated Loved Ones, The Broken System, Prisoners, Black Lives Matter, Prison Chapter, Fighting for Justice, Equality, and Change, Us for Justice, Parents, Families, and Loved Ones of Prisoners and Parolees Support Group, Citizens for Social Justice, Coalition for Prison Reform. These are all advocates. They accept all of this because they're true advocates. Campaign to End Prisons for Profit. And that's something we really need to talk about, because there's a lot of these people, these private prisons, that are making big money, and the Department of Corrections around the country, big money. The penal system's making money off of the blood, sweat, and tears of our incarcerated loved ones. Moms of Prisoners, Prisoners' Moms, Uncensored, Prison Talk, Inmates Are Us, There's Hope for the Hurting Hearts, End Solitary Confinement, Parents of Prisoners, POPS, 2, Massachusetts, Prison Advocacy and Reform, Criminal Injustice and Prison Reform. These are all advocates that are truly advocates. They accept all these things because they're trying just as much as we are to turn everything around, to stop all the injustices going on behind those prison walls. United Voices for Prison and Parole Reform, Black Lives Matter in Virginia, the Prisoners Chapter, Prison Reform, Unity for Black and Brown Justice, Committee for International Reform and Police Accountability, Inmate Rights, Muslim-Christian Connection, End Life Without Parole for First-Time Offenders of a Fatality, Prison Ain't Cool, Stop Prison Abuse Now, SPAN, Color of Change, United Will Movement, A Nation of Flaws, Just Us in the Homeland, The Wrongfully Accused, Charged Convicted Support and Advice Group, Mothers with Incarcerated Sons and Daughters, Family Supporting Prisoners. These are all advocates. These are all people that accept all these things because they know that they are just as important in the results and the outcome of how prisoners come out, whether they come out alive, whether they come out rehabilitated, whether they die in prison, whatever the case may be. They know that we need to work quick and we need to work hard to do this, and we have to work in unity. Freedom for the Innocents, A Prisoner's Voice, Prison Family Talks, Movement for Social Justice, Concerned Mothers of Prisoners, Free the Innocent, Campaign to End Life Without Parole, Injustice Reform and Reentry, Justice for Prisoners, Michigan Prisoners Rights Advocacy, the Coalition for Human Rights, Massachusetts Incarcerated Individual Advocacy, Human Rights FL, Florida REP, Human Rights Coalition, Mothers and Fathers with Incarcerated Children, People Against Human Rights Violation, Ignite Justice, Oklahoma Chapter, Ignite Justice, the Justice Foundation, The Unexonerated, The Legacy Program, Movement for Peace and Justice Worldwide, Solidarity Against DOC Brutality, We Are Their Voices, Alabama Resistance Movement, Broken Shackles, Prison Outreach, Factually Innocent, HEALS Project, Helping End All Life Sentences, POPS Movement, Parents of Prisoners Movement, Journeys to Justice, Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Coalition, Overturning Justice Group, National Action Network, Orange County Chapter, Wrongfully Convicted, FUEL, Families United to End Life Without Parole, Death Penalty in America, a Marshall Project discussion group, All or Nothing, the Activist Support and Assist Group, Black Podcast Network, Black Podcast Support Network, Christian Mothers of Prison Inmates, Black and Brown United in Action, the Georgia Department of Corrections Policy Watch, Voices of Our Incarcerated Loved Ones, Guilty Until Proven Innocent. You know, these are all the letter-writing advocates for incarcerated, abused, and deprived. Black and Brown Community Control of the Police, Criminal Justice Advocacy for the Mentally Ill. This is the one I have a problem with. Criminal justice advocacy for mentally ill denies every time anything is sent to them. When we have discussions with psychologists or psychiatrists, I send the radio interview to them as well, and they deny every time. They're advocating for the mentally ill, but they're denying anything that they might find helpful. If they open their eyes, if they read it, if they listen, they might learn something. How about this one? Each one teach one. Inmate support reentry. And that is by Lawrence Drank, who does the Sunday show. South Carolina death penalty, abolish it. Fighting your fight with offenders and families. No rocks unturned, a journey for betterment. The great injustice. Wrongfully conviction awareness. You know, these are all prisoner advocacy groups. I can go on and on and on, but I won't take up the time to do it. I really will say, though, for those of them that are out there that I just named, a lot of them, they're doing really good work. They take these things. They do their own research. They accept the research that I've done and others have done and shared with them. When will you get it? When will a lot of you get it? You can't just use the word prisoner advocate as though you're doing something and then just want to do your own thing, because it takes a network. It takes a global network of prisoner advocacies and advocacy groups and coalitions. And it takes the help of our legislative members, for those who do help, to make a positive change, to stop all of this abuse, to stop all of this high recidivism rates. People like what they see, but they don't listen to what they see. Because if they listen to what they see, then they would be themselves trying to do more than they're doing. They would try to get connected. And how many times have people been invited to come on this show to talk about these things, including advocates and especially advocates? But for whatever reason, when they talk big, a lot of them don't act. A lot of them are too afraid to go on a radio show and talk about it in public, especially when it's national. And there's a lot of advocates and coalitions that have problems with other advocates. But the problem that that one person or maybe two people are having with an advocate does not have to affect the rest of the group. But we have people too afraid to even speak to the advocate that the other two are having the problem with, too afraid to speak because they don't want the others to look at them as though you're turning against us, you're sticking with that one, you're siding with that one, that woman, or you're siding with that male advocate. You know, that's cowardly. We don't need cowards in the advocacy group. We don't need cowards in the country that claim to be advocating to abolish life and life without parole, to abolish life sentences, to abolish the death penalty. We need advocates who have some guts to speak out, to be their own boss, not to be a follower, but to be a leader. Because if they have good intentions and they're too afraid to speak about it openly themselves, they have to go through their peers whom they look up to. And looking up to their peers, what are they looking up to? If the peers aren't willing to work in unity with others, then there's got to be a reason. We talk about a lot of people in this government that are looking for fame and monies. Everything is about money and fame and power. Everything is corrupt. Many groups out there in the advocacy world who start these nonprofit organizations or start these organizations or coalitions, that's what they're looking for. Many might start out good, but once they get out there, they get their organizations up and running and they see all this money coming in. What happens? It becomes a greedy attitude, mentality, heart. People can do a lot of good in this country. They can advocate for the incarcerated population in this country. They don't need money. They don't need a lot of money. They can recruit. There's a lot of students in the colleges, the universities around the country that are going to school for law, that are going to school for criminal justice, that are going to school for social work, that are going to school for psychology and psychiatry, that are going to school for medical. There's a lot of them that are just looking to get into organizations like the ones we have out here. so that they can get the experience or they can get their internships. They're not looking for money. They're looking for experience. They're looking for interns to do their interns. They're looking to understand more about the criminal justice system. They're looking to understand more about why people commit crime. And they don't charge anything. But yet these organizations that are depriving prisoners of getting help, denying them help and saying they don't have the resources, they don't try to get the resources because they're getting all this money in. And as long as they're getting money in, they're going to keep making it seem like they're without. And I'll say one thing, even with Ukraine, they keep saying they're without, but yet we have the United States sending billions and billions and billions of dollars, not only the United States, the whole world has been sending billions of dollars to them in food and weapons and supplies and everything. Money? Who's going to say, well, we're doing okay, we don't need any more, when it's being given to them like candy? Well, that's what's happening to our organizations and our coalitions in the United States. Many start out good and they end up becoming greedy. And who's benefiting? Not the prisoners. Not those prisoners. Not even the formerly incarcerated that are out there in the communities. A lot of them, they're having trouble getting housing, transitional housing or otherwise. They're having trouble getting jobs. Where's all these reentry programs that talk so much about all this help that they're going to get when they come out? And they get all this money for certain things they don't do anything with. I remember starting an organization years ago. And what I did, I made calls to the housing authority. I talked to them. I told them about what we were doing. I asked if there was a contact person, if there was someone there that I could contact or one of the advocates could contact when their client's coming out of prison. If there was one person we can talk to. Because that's what you want to do, is establish one contact in anything. I contacted the school, community colleges, and I established a connection with one person. So when we're working with all these people on the outside, we want to be prepared. When we have our loved ones or when we have our clients come out, we want to have them prepared. So we make one call to the schools or the universities or the wherever, the housing. And we say, well, we have somebody coming out. Can you have somebody interview them, you know, so that they can have housing? We helped with the resumes. We put together resumes for them. We wrote letters on their behalf to take to the thrift shops or to the retail stores to get the appropriate clothing free because they didn't have jobs at the time. They didn't have money. So we gave them letters to take to these places along with their resumes so that they can go and apply for jobs being presentable with a resume. But the government, of course, they had the quarry, which now the quarry, to my knowledge, they say after 5 years, most quarries are squashed if the crimes are nonviolent. But these are the things that we can do. It doesn't take money to do those things. It doesn't take money to do research into all these programs available to the formerly incarcerated or those soon to be released. And then when you find these resources, don't just give it to the prisoner. Make the calls to these resources. Find out what they're about. Find out what they can actually do to help. Check to see if they have had any reviews, bad or good. And if they're advertising that they do all these things, and yet whenever you send a client their way or make a referral and they always say, no, they can't help, then you know something is not right. You know something is not right, because if they don't have the resources or the help, then they need to put on their website, they need to put temporarily on halt. Temporarily on halt. We have reached a limited quota or something. But don't have these incarcerated individuals writing and calling and having their loved ones call and doing all these things only to get rejected every single time. And that's what happens. Prisoners are so frustrated around the country and their loved ones that they feel they can't trust anybody. And a lot of times that's what caused them to end up in prison. Lack of trust, because people have deceived them, lied to them. They don't need to go into prison after being so deceived and lied to and having their freedom taken from them, only to be lied to and deceived by people who are advocates who are supposed to be helping. I don't know where your head is. I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know how you were raised, but I know one thing. When people are raised properly, they want to help somebody. When they become advocates, they want to do everything they can to help those they are advocating for. Not just to get a name, not just to be famous, not to be out there before the media talking a good talk and doing absolutely nothing, but the media will go along with it because they don't have a clue. The media, it consists of all these young reporters these days who are so busy trying to be like their peers that they're almost like robots. They talk the same, laugh the same, dress the same, act the same. So when they see these people out there before the light, before the media, especially when they're young too, it's a farce. It's a farce. And the only ones benefiting are they themselves, the media and the people before the cameras. I'm the type of person, I like transparency. If there's no transparency, then there's no honesty. And we have a lot of that going on in this country. Organizations, I stepped down from my own in 2014. Before that, I was transparent in everything. The person that took over, he was so non-transparent that he deceived the state and claiming he was from one state when he was from another. And the people that were trusted enough to be overseeing even the new president, they were so disgustingly wrong that they ended up registering the organization in California under a new tax exempt and just letting the one go, founded initially in 2004 in Massachusetts. These are the kind of things that we have in this country, and we wonder why there's so much corruption. We wonder why the prisons are maxed out and why prisoners are being forced to double cell and even triple cell. It doesn't make sense. But that's the corrupt government we live in. Because if there was anything good about this government, there would be a lot of transparency. They can't even get along with one another. The Republicans and Democrats can't even get along with one another. And every time they say we're doing this for the American people, that's BS, because they're doing it because they can't stand their opposite party. They're not doing anything for the American people, because if they were, they would be working together in unity to come up with solutions to everything, from criminal justice to poverty. Right now, because our monies are going over to other countries, this country is it's in a bad shape, an economic bad shape, a recession bad shape. Take care of business at home before you do anything for anybody else. Because we, the bullies of the world, cannot put on airs anymore. Every country is looking at the United States of America. They're looking at all of this. They're looking at the Democrats and Republicans going back and forth in opposition. They're looking at the United States of America and what's happening right now with the gas prices going so sky high and the poverty, people having food problems, shortages. They see it all. If you can remember, this is the United States of America. We have representatives from every country in the world in this country. Don't you think that the relatives of those people abroad are not telling them what's going on in their own country, in the United States? Don't you think we have the Polish, and we have the Ukrainians, and we have the Africans, the Ghanaians, and the Togos, and Nigerians, and all these European countries, the Netherlands, Poland, and Norway, and all these countries? These people are in this country. They have relatives and friends in those other countries. And all those people abroad looking at this country right now and laughing, because they know exactly what's going on. They know more about what's going on in the United States than this divided, racist, hateful country itself. People are not, they have open minds looking from abroad. While here, everybody's mind is so distorted because there's so much hatred, retaliation, vengeance, anger. They see more of what's going on in this country than we do. And when you listen to CNN News and MSNBC, when you listen to ABC and NBC, when you listen to Fox News, One World News, when you listen to all these news stations, they talk about these other countries, and they talk about all that we're doing and all this stuff. These other countries hear it. These countries know that the United States has gone down so far. It went lower than it could ever go. But yet we still have these proud, proud people in positions in government. All these people that are so proud. And from U.S. military, let me tell you something. People can come out and they can act gung-ho because they went in the military. My father was in the Army. I had three brothers in the Marines. I had a brother in the Air Force, two sisters in the Army. I have nephews and nieces that have been in the military. Yet when they come out, it's not about them. They want to forget what they've seen because most of them were in war times. Vietnam, World War II, Mediterranean, all these things. Let's try to be humble, because what happens is we have people coming out, they want to build themselves up, so sometimes they make it seem when they were in these other countries that things were so, so bad. Just like when I left the country to travel, I traveled to all these third world countries back then. And everybody was telling me, because this is what they were taught to believe, don't go to those countries. They're dangerous. Don't go alone. Don't do this. Don't do that. When I went to these countries, they were more hospitable than these people in this country. They were so hospitable. They have the faith. They believe in a God. They believe in God. Where in this country, we have all these religious organizations talking about it, but don't have a belief at all. So that's my thing. I wanted to get that out, because sometimes if you hold these things in, it really gets to you. It really does, especially when you're so disappointed in a country you once respected. In a country that you once respected. I grew up 6 miles from the Kennedy compound. Ted Kennedy used to come to a club on our street all the time. His nephews and nieces as well. But the leadership today, I'm sorry. There was also, I need to bring this up, because back then it was working, and I don't know why Ronald Reagan decided to do away with it, but was once called the CETA program and later called Job Partnership. And many of you may remember it. The CETA program and Job Partnership were for people of low income. They didn't have to be on welfare, because these people gave jobs, and from those jobs that they gave them, a lot of the people that participated in Job Partnership and CETA programs ended up in much, much better positions. Some of them database operators with the Department of Social Services. Some of them became social workers. A lot of them had jobs. They didn't have to go out in the streets and be homeless. They didn't have to go to all the welfare offices. Why Reagan took that out, I don't know. It's just as though the same people, I don't know who it was, it could have been Reagan, but all of these high school dropouts, there was a time when they dropped out of high school, they could go into the military. And many of them came out as officers. And then somebody, some leader, government leader, all of a sudden decides, well, they're going to stop that. So now in order to go into the military, you can't drop out of school. You have to be a high school graduate or a college student. So now you got all these people on the streets, a lot of them homeless, a lot of them committing crimes, a lot of them really messed up, because they took away alternatives that worked. Did they take those alternatives away because they're so greedy they didn't want to spend any money on supplementing some of these programs like CETA? Because the CETA program and Job Partnership, the business people that were hiring would pay and the government would pay something towards it. And all we know about the government is the corruption, the greed. So I can imagine why they stopped it. But their goals, crime increase. the recidivism rate jumping sky high. Job partnership, the CETA program, allowing these dropouts to join the military, these were all successful. These were all so good and it worked so fine until they made it impossible for anybody in the 10th, 11th, or 12th grade to join the military if they dropped out of school because they didn't have that piece of paper. That piece of paper means crap. When you're living in a world where you need to have hands-on experience, many people cannot take college. Many of them have ADD, focusing. Many of them. Difficulty on focusing in books and things like that. But many of them become perfect by hands-on training, visual training. Many people get positions in high places because of who they know or who what family they came from. Many of them are illiterate, but yet they're in high places because of who they know. I don't know how this system works, but I know it's the only country in the world that I can imagine is so messed up. Because we have people coming on from other countries on the radio show on certain times to talk about only in America. There's no other country in the world that has mass incarceration. There's no other country in the world that has such a high rate of recidivism. There's no other country in the world that has life and life without parole sentencing. Unless it's an extreme situation, an extreme case, where they may have a maximum of 20 or 25 people serving life without parole, not hundreds of thousands. And I'm going to bring up again the causes people are in prison. We have an epidemic, once again, mental illnesses in this country and addictions. And when I say mental illness, I'm not talking about mental retardation, although I'm sure we do have them in there too. I'm talking about severe psychological issues. When they talk about gun control, they talk about people that are mentally dysfunctional, mentally dangerous. Well, how can you tell when you're doing the gun checks? Because there's a lot of people that are in their right minds when they buy the guns. But yet they may be holding some kind of traumas in or some kind of secret in them of pain that they've held internally for years. And sometimes it only takes one or two things to bring it to its surface. So the most normal people can have breakdowns. They can stumble. Then we look at the people around them. Who stumbled them? What happened? What caused them to do what they did? And then we go back to a lot of the lies and deception that goes on in this country. There's a lot of people that are being raised to hate without a cause, to hate people they don't know, or to lie to and deceive and to show your dark side, where you can go out there and screw somebody over and think it's a big joke with your peers or your family. But it doesn't happen that way. Sometimes it backfires. And when it backfires, who's to blame? And those of you mothers and fathers who are out there in the streets drugging and drinking and doing all this craziness, trying to act like some cool jackass while your kids are out there crying out for you in some way or another, and they end up going looking for somebody that is going through the same thing they're going through, others that can relate to them or they can relate to, and that's how you have gangs formed, or that's how you have crimes in groups. A lot of mothers and fathers are out there drugging and drinking. And look at, there's a lot of these adults, rap singers too, but there's a lot of these adults that are out there walking with their pants down to their behind. And they wonder why these kids are so messed up. It's not the kids' fault. The kid that did that shooting at the Texas school, if everyone remembers not too long before, there was a kid around the same age that went from in one state to another where there was a protest going on and shot and killed with was something like a machine gun. I forgot what they call those guns, but shot two people. And what happened? He was acquitted. He ended up going to another state with a weapon he should not have even had, shot and killed two people, and he got acquitted of all wrongdoing. And how many shootings have there been since by the adolescents, 17, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds? And it's not going to get better, I guarantee. You're going to see more of it. Because our government, our courts, slap kids on the hand because they are young. They let them get away with it. When you let kids get away with something, what happens? They do it again. No discipline anymore. We live in a country where we can blame our courts. We can blame a lot of the lawyers out there that are denying help for those that need it and taking on cases that involve a lot of money. So there's going to be a lot more crime going on. This is only the beginning. I hate to say it, but this is only the beginning, everyone. You're going to start seeing this all over the place. Look at that one. There was one who put something on Facebook that he was going to go and shoot up a school. This was right after the Texas incident. Now they have him holding him without bail until his court date. But when they searched his house and everything, they didn't find any weapons, but he made the threat. So you're going to see a lot of young, dysfunctional people either saying they're going to do something because they want to feel big, they want to feel important to their peers, or they're going to actually do it. And we know guns can be bought on the streets. They talk about that all the time. So, advocates, what are you going to do? You're going to keep up the game, the ones that are not doing anything, the ones that are rejecting to be involved in other things. If it's not coming from you, you don't want to see it. It has to be about me, right? And that me attitude is not going to help the incarcerated individuals who depend on us to help them. And for you advocates that are out there in your little cliques, and I hope you're listening, you are very insecure. Very insecure. If you need cliques to help you to look important as an advocate, because if you had any confidence in yourselves, if you were stable in your own acts and activities, and you think that there is something wrong, you don't need to be in a clique with your peers. You need to be reaching out to advocates that are trying to do the same thing that you want to see done. And they're too busy working on the issue rather than to focus on cliques. Cliques went out in high school, junior high, or whatever. But many advocates are still looking at themselves as being in school, I guess. Because they have to side with their peers. Just like members of society side with the victims and they fail to look at both sides. They fail to realize they can support both sides and remain neutral if they don't know the entire situation, the entire facts leading up to a downfall of an incarcerated individual or individuals. I contacted, again, the American Psychological Association. One thing advocates can do, if you're interested, even a public, you don't have to be an advocate, but even if you're just a citizen in society, a member of society, contact the American Psychological Association and ask them why they're not more involved. Ask them why no one hears about them other than the money that they're getting for research. I would be interested to find out what you're hearing from them. But I will tell you one thing, most likely you won't even be able to talk to any of them. You'll get the receptionist, as is with a lot of these law firms, especially the ones you see out in the media all the time. You're going to always get the receptionist. And the receptionist will pass it on, because usually the person you want to speak to is never there. They're always out and about, probably in the media, but they're not in the prisons helping, because there's a lot of prisoners who have reached out to a lot of these organizations, and they'll be glad to tell you if you write to these prisoners and ask them, which organizations have you written to that have denied you help? They will gladly tell you. I could tell you, but I've already brought as much of that information to the public as I can from what the prisoners wanted me to get out to them. And prisoners, since they don't have a voice, they'll ask their advocates. They'll ask their advocates to try to find them someone else, because they will list the people or the organization. They will name that organization or the organizations that have been denying prisoners over and over and over and over again. But yet, their website's still saying they're there for those whose civil rights are being violated. They're there for those who are ready to come out post-conviction. They're ready for appellates. They're ready for abuses. They're ready for all kinds of things. Ready for who? Ready for their loved ones, maybe, who are now out of prison because of them or because of their friends' loved ones. And that's what it's all about. They get all this money from the public for prison reform or to help the prisoners, and yet the money's all going to people they know, their friends, their loved ones, their friends' friends and loved ones. And how many politicians go into the prisons to visit with prisoners when they go in to visit maybe a loved one of their own or someone that they know they're going into anyway? So let's visit a couple of others just to make it look like we're doing something. And then when they find that the person that the prisoners they're visiting are being abused or detained in cells for hours and hours and hours every day, 22 hours a day, none of their belongings and all this, and they say, well, look into it. Well, that's all that gets done is they look into it. Prisoners have been confined for, you know, some prisoners have been in solitary confinement, and I was amazed to find this out. For 30-something years, 40-something years, solitary confinement is one little room, one little cell, by yourself for years and years and years. Anybody with a heart like that that can stand by and see somebody in a cell, solitary confinement for years and years and years, what kind of bringing up do they have? I'm serious. What kind of parents would teach their kids to stand by and watch somebody suffer for years in solitary confinement or on restrictive blocks? What kind of parents do that? But who gets blamed? The people that are doing it. They get blamed when the parents are the wrong ones. But if the ones that are doing it now are allowing it to happen, then they're following that cycle. And their kids are going to be the same way. They're going to grow up with the same kind of deception. And they're going to be allowing this abuse to go on, whether it be psychological torment, physical, medical, whatever. I can't imagine, and I can understand now why in the Bible, when it talks about the Good Samaritan, a stranger stopping to help somebody in the street that needed help, medical help, urgently, when the pastors and the priests walk by, when the Pharisees walk by, all these big shots walk by, and it turns out to be a Good Samaritan going by to see this person in the street that puts him on his donkey or horse or whatever it was, and takes them to the nearest inn to be treated and pays them to help this individual that this Good Samaritan didn't even know. But he had a heart to help somebody he sees in desperation. And when he got time to leave, he told the person, if you have to do anything more to help him, keep track, and the next time I come by here, I will pay it. The Good Samaritan. We have people out there who actually know the incarcerated individuals behind those prison walls, who are now in high places. This actually people who went to school and grew up with some of those incarcerated individuals. And they know that the incarcerated individuals were good people and wanted to know why, how, why didn't they come to me? Why did they stumble? How did they stumble? But yet never once did they go in to visit with that person that they were once so close to find out from that person himself or herself exactly what happened. Instead, they cowardly back away completely while strangers try to help the incarcerated individual. Strangers. How about families that disconnect with their loved ones when their loved ones go to prison? Don't you realize people are going to come to you because you're a family member and say, what happened to him or her? Why did they stumble? What happened? And you as a family member, not knowing a thing about what happened because you were too proud or too ignorant to stand by your loved one, your sister or brother or son or daughter or whatever the case may be, to actually try to find out what happened. So you can have an answer when people come to you instead of giving them some kind of bogus answer that you don't even know that might make them look even worse. Families have let families down. In the book, the Bible book of Micah, chapter 7, verses 5 to 7, it says not to put your trust in family or companion. Put your trust in God because family and companion will let you down too. Micah, chapter 7, verses 5 to 7. So even in biblical times, they knew the great prophets of God, Most High, was letting everybody know not to trust your family, not to trust your friends. And the Good Samaritan, it was letting everybody know, sometimes it's a Good Samaritan, a stranger, complete stranger that you can depend on for help when you're at your lowest peak. You know, when I hear pastors and priests talk about how God talked to them, I used to think they were crazy. God doesn't talk to them. But God does talk to us through Bible scriptures. Everybody thinks when you read the Bible, everything in the Bible pertains just to you alone. Or it doesn't pertain to you at all. But it's not the whole Bible that gives us the answers to our questions. It's not the entire Bible that tells us what God is telling us. It's certain scriptures in the Bible. So what you do is you read the Bible. And when you come to scriptures that pertain to you, especially if you have prayed before opening the Bible, especially if you have fasted, God does speak to you. He was speaking to us when he told Noah after the flood that the world would never be destroyed by flood again. The next destruction would come by fire. And what's happening now? Global warming. The earth is at its hottest peak. We got the nuclear weapons out there, chemical destruction. We got fires in California, all over the world. The sun is getting hotter. So when he talked to Noah that time, he was telling us as well, all the people to come. That's why the Bible's there. He was letting us all know through Bible scriptures that there would never be a flood again. And he even told Noah, the sign, the rainbow in the sky, is a reminder that there will never be another destruction by flood. But he did say by fire the next time. He talks in 2 Timothy chapter 3 about the final days and how everybody, of the critical times, hard to deal with, how people are going to be boastful, corrupt, proud, cold hearts. All these things are described in 2 Timothy chapter 3. He talks to us in 2 Peter chapter 3, how a lot of people don't think that this world will ever come to its end because nothing's happened since the flood. Everything has gone on as it usually does from the time of the flood. But it also goes on to say to be mindful that the flood did occur when people were laughing at Noah when he was building the ark. There was no rain back then. The mist of the ground was what fertilized everything, what was bringing the water. So people left at Noah when he said there was going to be a great flood, and he's building this ark, and he's trying to tell people to change their ways. They were laughing at him. They thought he was crazy until the flood actually started and the doors actually closed. God closed the door to the ark, and those people didn't stand a chance. So in 2 Peter chapter 3, it talks about all this. In the book of Daniel, chapter 7, it talks about the vision that Daniel had. And that was all referring to these days. In Revelation, chapter 13, chapter 17, 18, it talks about the kings coming together. And you know, for that great day of Armageddon. And you know, all these countries are now coming together because of this thing with Ukraine and Russia. But also says kings will be sitting at the same table, deceiving one another. So while all these presidents and prime ministers are sitting together talking about solutions and talking about all these things, they can't stand one another. But they're coming together because that's what it says in the Bible scriptures. All nations will come together for that great day of Armageddon. So if many of you don't think that this system of things is coming to its end, I guarantee you better wake up. It's happening. It's all around us. And unless you start learning the Bible, not listening to pastors or priests, because if pastors or priests were reading the Bible, they would know in the book of Matthew, or St. Matthew as Catholics would say, in the book of Matthew, it talks about, Matthew 24, I believe it is, it talks about not calling anyone father or reverend, because Jesus said to his disciples, there is only one Father. There is only one Father, and that is God himself. And Jesus himself said he is the Son of God, which means that Jesus was not only the first to be risen from the dead, he was the first of all the brothers and sisters which will follow when he comes, when he returns. But Jesus himself, the Christ, Emmanuel, said himself, he was the Son of God. So a lot of people think Jesus was God. Jesus was not God, but the Father put Jesus in charge of everything. We cannot do anything unless we do it in the precious and blessed and adorable name of our Savior, the Christ Jesus. We are getting ready to close pretty soon. And as always, many of you who are listening and probably going to be complaining or talking about it after did not come on to state anything, feedback, any complaints, any experiences, any criticism, anything. Again, I must have done something right if you didn't want to call in at least to criticize. But we are going to be closing today, and at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow, as always, Wednesday, we will have Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, back on with us. And on Thursday at 5 o'clock, we will have Jeffrey Deskovic. Jeffrey was a adolescent who was wrongfully convicted and sentenced to prison. He had served, I believe it was 12 years or 17 years or whatever. He'll talk about it on the show. But he came when he was released after the Innocence Project substantiated his innocence. Jeffrey ended up getting his master's in criminal justice. And he became, after that, a lawyer for the wrongfully convicted in New York. So Jeffrey will be on with us Thursday at 5 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. Mariam Jacobs tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And I want to invite all of you to listen in, call in, come on, whatever you want to do. No one's pushing and nobody's pulling anybody's arm or leg. If you truly want to see change and you don't want to be part of the problem, but you do want to be part of the resolution, start getting more involved in these shows to call in, come on, or whatever the case may be. No one is going to be laughing at you. A lot of people are insecure. They don't have to be. Be your own person, because everybody that you're around at one point in time was insecure. And sometimes the only reason they're not insecure now is because they have learned how to redirect their criticism and their hatred to other people, which gains them some momentum because they have others like them, like themselves, who will join forces with them. But be your own person. Don't be afraid to call in. People will admire you more if you're a leader and you speak out rather than be a follower and hold back. We are now going to close this episode. I thank you so much for listening in. And once again, I hope all of you will try to make some changes in your life. Be a part of something. And try to make it being a part of something that's right, something righteous and not wrong, something that's good and not hateful, and not retaliative and not vengeful. Because as it says in the book of Romans 12, as Jesus had mentioned, according to scriptures, love thy neighbor, forgive thy neighbor, because vengeance is mine. Thank you all for joining, and we're now going to end this episode. Thank you.